This is the Education Gadfly Show.
If you're listening to this podcast, don't tell Mayor Bloomberg that I called him a small man. Hey, well, he's like the same size as me. I mean, I figured, look, I'm short. I'm able to call other people on their being vertically challenged.
Now, here's your host, Mike Petrilli.
Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute here at the Education Gadfly Show and online at edexcellence.net. And now, please join me welcoming my co-host, a surprise Golden Globe nominee, Michael Brickman.
It's an honor just to be nominated.
Well, and it should be, because that is quite a list. The great thing about the Golden Globes, Michael, is that they always put the stars on the list, right? It's actually the people, you know, movies and TV shows and actors and actresses you've actually heard of.
Yeah, I mean, I can't say that my performance this year necessarily merited it. It's more of a lifetime achievement award, I feel
yes,
like.
Yes, exactly. Well, hey, you know, you got to be a pretty good actor in order to work for a politician, right? I have noticed, and we can't tell, you know, people listen to this show, they can't see your expression. You have one of the best poker faces I've ever noticed.
Well, I don't know what I'm going to say until I say it, so it's more just kind of me trying to put all of my energies into actually saying something.
Yeah, well, there's the secret, people. There's the secret. All right. Well, lots going on in the world and in the world of education policy. So, Pamela, let's play Pardon the Gadfly.
Earlier this week, the New York Times published a five-part report on poverty entitled Invisible Child, which followed a year in the life of a homeless child named Dasani. To Dasani, school is not just for education. It's a refuge. How do we serve kids like her?
Ooh, tough stuff, Michael. What do you think? What do you take away from all this?
Well, since this was the New York Times, it was pretty clear, and it was just kind of the obligatory New York Times thing that this is all Reagan's fault. But de Blasio is going to finally make those rich people in New York give up the cure for poverty. So That's good news.
Yeah, no, exactly. Look, there's been a lot of talk about inequality, and the president gave a big speech on this last week. And, you know, I just did a post on National Review Online where if you just take out a few paragraphs here and there, a sentence here or there, it's a really good speech. It's actually a speech that a Republican, in my opinion, could give quite comfortably, talking about, for example, that we need to grow the economy that helps everybody, that in fact, some of these anti-poverty programs were not well designed and may have discouraged people from working. That at the end of the day, civil society has an important role to play. Of course, then the parts of the speech that I took out that Obama actually had in, you know, in many respects, go against all of these ideas. I mean, there are a bunch of programs that would slow economic growth, in my opinion, that would discourage people from working, and that, you know, pretend that government, and we are the government, he said, Michael Brickman, we are government, that the government, you know, would somehow be able to deal with these very difficult issues. You know, we talk about homeless. I mean, you know, people, a lot of people out there are struggling, but you dig into these issues at all, you realize it's not so much about money, or not just about money, but about so many other psychological issues, you know, social issues, family breakdown, the complexities of the human, of human life. And none of that can be easily overtaken by just, you know, adding some more money into transfer programs.
Yeah, I mean, it's you took out all the policy stuff was your problem.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
You left in the hard charging conservative rhetoric.
Yes.
So
yes, exactly.
If Obama can just listen to that and focus on some of these programs that are working, are actually serving as a safety net, but then take some of the money from the ones that are just huge, expensive entitlements that aren't solving poverty, and actually figure out how to, as the president says, give a hand out, not give a hand out, but give a hand up.
Yeah. Look, I will say on the homelessness front, I have come to believe where I'm at right now is that we are better off if we have cities that have both a traditional public school sector and a charter school sector. I am a little bit worried about anyone that goes all charter, because I do think it's helpful to have a district, if it took advantage of this, which most don't, have a common curriculum and some common approaches so that kids who end up moving around all the time could find some consistency in their education. And I think charter schools are always going to struggle with that. And that is one of the benefits of having a coherent system. And so having these two things side by side, I think makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. I mean, I think you can work to alleviate some of those problems, but kids who move around, I mean, that amount of kind of turmoil in a young kid's life is going to be a problem, I think, almost no matter what you do. So how do you get How do you stabilize the family first, I think, is part of the problem.
All right. Question two.
Mike, you wrote an article for the New York Daily News praising Bloomberg for boosting the graduation rate, but urging de Blasio to fix the city's elementary schools. How should he do so?
Well, before answering that question, Pamela, I want to point out that I had what I thought was a brilliant title to this article. But of course, newspapers never use your actual suggested title. It was something playing on the fact that here you had Mayor Bloomberg, a rather small man, right, doing a good job for the big kids in the system. But not doing a good job for the small kids in the system. So it was going to be up to Bill de Blasio, the very big man, to do that for the small kids. Now, Brickman, you pointed out to me that maybe I wouldn't want to call Michael Bloomberg a small man. But, I, you know, and in the end, the editor saved me from myself, I guess.
Yeah, all part of our effort to win goodwill in all parts. Conservative, liberal, yeah. In between, just trying to make everybody upset.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Especially since Bloomberg is about to become one of the most influential education philanthropists in the world. So anyways, if you're listening to this podcast, don't tell Mayor Bloomberg that I called him a small man. Hey, well, he's like the same size as me. I mean, I figure, look, I'm short. I'm able to call other people on their being vertically challenged. Okay.
Why are you mayor then?
Well, just wait. I mean, come on. I'm only 40. There's a lot of time ahead of me. All right. So, but back to the point here. Yes, my argument is that the elementary schools in New York City, like in most places, are mediocre. They are content-free wastelands, right? Because they think, many of the people running the system think that teaching reading is about teaching a skill. And then we know from E.D. Hirsch, that once kids learn how to decode, it's all about content knowledge. You got to bring back history, science, geography, art, music, literature back to the elementary school curriculum. And if de Blasio doesn't get serious about that, any money he puts into preschool, which he seems to plan to do, put a lot of money into preschool, is not going to add up to a hill of beans. These kids might have some gains coming out of preschool. It's going to vanish if they go into these mediocre elementary schools.
Yeah, and it kind of remains to be seen if his preschool plan makes it through, which you don't know. It has to get through the New York legislature. So that's the pretty steep hill to climb. But, you know, what is his plan for making this a good preschool program rather than just a preschool program that serves the small percentage of kids who want to be served but aren't right now?
Right. I mean, that's part of the point, right? There's not that many kids in New York City who are poor, who are not getting served. There are some, and we should serve those kids. But the bigger challenge is to make these programs high quality. That means starting in preschool with a lot of the pre-literacy stuff, including the content knowledge stuff, and continuing that into elementary school. If he doesn't do all of that, then, you know, any money he spends on pre-K is probably going to be a big waste. If he cares. Wow. I don't know if he cares. Does he care? Does he care? Who knows? Maybe he doesn't care.
He has the best of intentions, Mike.
I'm willing to give him that. That's
pissing
what we
off
do.
The outgoing mayor, calling names to the incoming mayor.
Hey, but he's got a cute family. He's got a very cute family, and they're moving into Gracie Mansion. So that's good.
Are they?
They are. They've decided. They're okay. Moving.
Yep. Family meeting went well, I guess.
I guess so. I mean, look, it's interesting. I mean, I think they should, right? I mean, would it be crazy if a president was elected? Like, if Bloomberg ever runs for president and he gets elected, is he not going to live in the White House? I mean, what? You're too good for that, Bloomberg, huh? So I think people should live. Hey, you got a mansion for the mayor. The mayor should live there. That's what I think. Okay, topic number three.
The data backpack is growing in popularity. What is it?
Brickman, I don't quite get it. What's this data backpack thing and why are people excited about it?
Well, according to my cheat sheet here, it is a detailed personalized digital record that can follow a child between multiple districts and service providers. But
wait a minute. Hold on. Isn't that exactly the kind of thing that most conservatives and libertarians now say they're against? This sounds like the Common Core conspiracy.
Well, everything is part of the Common Core conspiracy, as you well know, Mike. Yeah. But this is something that I think actually will help parents. It's something that says if there's data on your child, you as a parent have a right to access that data. And it's something that I think can integrate into some of these longitudinal data systems to actually help parents know what their kids are learning or not learning in school.
All right. But and so this is there's an ALEC bill out here that's promoting this. Looks like it's getting some traction in Indiana. But I mean, isn't there also worries, though, about data privacy, about somebody hacks into these systems? I mean, that's got to be a part of the discussion, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the concern with all of these things. And there are definitely some people who will say, well, who cares if the parents can have access to the data? We don't want the data to be out there.
Yeah.
But I don't really know what the answer is to that. You want the data exists. It's going to be generated. Mm-hmm. It's generated in every part of our life. It's just about making it secure and making sure it doesn't fall in the wrong hands.
Look, what's really going to be transformative, Brickman, I wrote this before you came to Fordham. cameras in the classrooms. Okay. As a parent, I mean, data is nice, but what I want to do is sit at my desk and I want to be able to just pipe right in and see what's happening in my kid's classroom in real time. How cool would that be?
So cool. And you can have extra time doing that because I saw your piece earlier today about how you won't have to drive people to soccer practice or to the grocery store because you'll have your Google car. So
Exactly. No, that's right. Less time actually with your kid, but more time watching them from afar. I think this is definitely steps in the right direction. Don't you think so, Brickman?
Quality parenting in the 21st century. Yes. Mike Petrilli is on it.
I am on it. All right. Thank you, Brickman. Thank you, Pamela. That's all the time we've got for Pardon the Gadfly. Now it's time for everyone's favorite Amber's Research Minute. Welcome back to the show, Amber.
Thanks, Mike.
So we were just talking about how great it's going to be when we can watch our kids' classroom from the comfort of our own office. Just pipe right into the video. Huh?
Do you want somebody watching you while you're in your office all day?
It would be very boring. I don't mind. Hello, I work in a fishbowl. It's a glassed-in office. This already happens.
Yeah, partly true.
But I know. You wouldn't have liked this as a teacher, right?
No, I mean, trust me. If you think I'm a risk to your child, don't hire me in the first place, please.
That's not what I'm talking about. I'm not saying you're a risk to my child. That's not why I'm doing it. It's because I'm just curious. I'd like to see what he's learning, how it's going.
I thought it was because you didn't trust the principal to do a good hire.
No, I just want to, be able to, from time to time, see what they're doing in the classroom and perhaps say, why are they doing such stupid, boring stuff?
Maybe you could get
off this teacher be a little more engaging?
Get off your behind and come to the school, perhaps.
Because schools are so open to that. They just love having parents drop by at a moment's notice.
True. It is a problem. I know my work, right? If I'm a teacher, I don't want you in my business.
I know. We all feel like that. Okay. Yes. What you got for us? Speaking of business, what business
holiday.
Do we have?
It's a little thin in research land because of the holidays and all, but...
Yeah. By the way, everybody seems to be shutting down.
Yeah,
okay. It is too early to shut down, people. Right. We got a whole nother week and a half before.
It's a little early.
And by the way, here at Fordham, I want you to know, we are going to take 1 week off for Christmas, then we are going to publish the Gadfly on January 2nd.
Some of us are taking 2 weeks off for the holidays.
Amber.
But anywho, I digress.
You know, Brickman, ever since she got married, slack.
Yeah, relax a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Bad influence
on her.
Okay.
Tears around here. Anyway, so I'm doing the annual report from the Alliance, all right? Lays out the number of school districts where at least 20% of students attend charters. 2005, we only had seven. This is kind of a big deal. In 2005, we only had seven school districts with 20% of their kids in charters. Now we have 32. We still got the top, we still have the same folks we expect. New Orleans up to 79% in charters, Detroit at 51%, D.C. at 43%. So we had an overall charter enrollment increase by about 225,000 kids during the last school year. So we got about 2.3 million kids in charters now, about one in every 20 kids in America. 33 new school districts were added this year that have significant charter school growth since last year. Four districts in the top 10 for 2 years in a row: Hillsborough County, L.A., Boston, New York City. L.A. added 22,000 kids last year. Kansas City, this kind of caught my eye. It wasn't in the report, but I'm looking at the cool map they have in there. Kansas City was in the top 10 for market share, but they experienced negative growth, like the only city. Like, I don't know what's going on in Kansas City. Maybe you know something, but anyway, big fat -6 in the chart. Good news, as we explain in Gadfly this week, is the top 10 cities include some of the high performing sectors, New Orleans, D.C., Indianapolis, but also the worst performing, Philly, Dayton, Toledo. We're told on page 2 that this growth is due to the charter sector's track record of success. Pertains to some of the schools, of course.
Yep.
But, as we say, it'd be wise to practice a little more quality control, perhaps an automatic closure law, which has been somewhat successful in Ohio, right? Freedom from your authorizer, like we see in New Orleans. What else? The D.C. board, which is a pretty picky authorizing board.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that's kind of where it's kind of a mixed bag in terms of how you want to spin these results.
Well, look, I mean, I think the good news here is that we can see some cities that seem to have charter scale and charter quality, right? That it is doable, but it takes a lot of hard work. The Detroit bit is interesting to me. You know, they were tied with D.C. last year. Each had about 42% of the kids. Mm-hmm. Suddenly, you know, D.C. just eked up a percentage, but Detroit got the majority status. I don't know how that happened. I'd be curious to know more about that.
Right.
If that was from some school district closures or a big expansion in charters. I guess Michigan did recently expand, you know, they got rid of a cap on new charter schools. Right. I guess that's having an impact. I am curious, though, Amber, you know, a lot of us have always forever argued, well, if we got to a certain market share, then you would see a real response from school districts, right? Now we have 32 cities where we've got 1 in 5 kids going to charter schools. I think back in the day, we would have all thought that would have been plenty. We've got more cities that are now majority. Are we seeing a response from districts?
Well, we've got a report, and just interestingly enough, that mentions that's going to dig into that question. Like, is there a tipping point at which you're forcing the hand of districts to sort of try to mimic some of these practices or activities? We don't know yet. I know that EdNext, what was that, last year, did a report on competition. They just looked at media response, and they coded. They had this sort of elaborate coding system, and they looked at some responses of superintendents. And they said, well, they actually are responding. There's more activity here than we see in terms of at least mimicking programs, reaching out and doing communications. But to me, it seemed a little cosmetic in nature in terms of not real fundamental changes, but sort of icing on, you know, just stuff that was around the edges, but not fundamental structural change.
Well, I think part of the problem is this whole focus on market share. Certainly you want the people on the ground to be competing for students and doing that in a way that focuses on quality. But we don't have some of the other market mechanisms in place to make it a true market where some of the lower quality options are filtered out or closed or something's done. So, I don't know. For me, the only market share that matters is good seats.
Good seats.
Any second. Right. Doesn't matter.
Right.
But I mean, are we ever going to get there, right? This is what we keep hearing. Like, we don't have a true market. So, we can't, we're never going to see how this works. So, we don't have a true market. You know, it's like a Cato kind of thing.
Yeah, but I don't know what to do with that. No, that's right. Look, but I think the good seats question is right, and it would be interesting. I mean, look, it would be great to be able to try to analyze. I mean, we have a sense that DC sector is pretty good, right? Mm-hmm. Likewise with New Orleans, likewise with Indiana. We've got some of those data from Credo, but it would be great to know in a given city. Okay, here's the total student population, and here's the total student population in good schools, and to see, you know, who's looking like they're at the highest piece of that. Now, gets into the conversation of how do you define a good school, and do we look at value added or do we look at proficiency and all that kind of stuff. I my guess is that, you know, at this point we'd be looking at New Orleans would look pretty good on that on that score, right? Detroit, I don't know, probably not so much. DC maybe, but that would be interesting to know, because that, you're right, that at the end of the day is the kind of mix you want. You want to say, hey, is the city as a whole in public, private, charter schools providing good options for kids of all different sorts.
Yeah, and I think it's about making sure that you're closing some of these failing schools that are persistently underperforming. And different states, different cities are going to find different ways to measure what are the worst of the worst. Yeah. But if you're closing some of these schools and you have a halfway decent system, you're not talking about closing a 50th percentile school. You're talking about the bottom of the bottom. And I think most people actually can agree if you look at what some of those schools are.
What are we finding, though, in our home state? You know, I mean, I feel like we've had that law on the books for
in Ohio?
two or three years.
It's finally starting to, in Ohio, there's this automatic death penalty for low-performing schools, and it has forced a handful of schools to close. You know, the system, because the accountability system is changing, there's been some wiggle room. It's kind of restarted, and so it only has caught a few. Problem in Ohio is that we have a terrible problem with authorizer quality. You know, we had this idea, you know, we should let nonprofits be charter school authorizers. That's why we're allowed to be an authorizer. The problem is it has allowed in a lot of terrible authorizers who are only in it for the money, you know, have been chartering any group with a pulse, and are not closing down the bad schools. So, you know,
just to be clear, we're talking about the other ones, not for
him. Yes, the other ones. The other ones. Yes. That's right, Brittany.
Always perverse incentives to laws that benefit.
Look, I heard something interesting the other day. In DC, 35% of all charter schools that have ever started in DC have closed. And, you know, which is good. I mean, it means that there is a serious effort in this city to to deal mm-hmm. with quality. Now, that is churn. That is a lot of churn in some ways, and that doesn't come without its own costs. But I think that means that there's something very healthy happening here. We need it to happen in other places as
and
well.
And we pretty much think that's due to quality, because finance and quality are kind of tied.
Right.
Yeah.
I mm-hmm. think that's right. Mm-hmm. Okay. Excellent. Hey, this on the whole, let's admit it, these trends are going in the right direction. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you, Amber. Thank you, Brickman. That's all the time we've got. Until next week.
I'm Michael Brickman.
And I'm Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, signing off.
The Education Gadfly Show is a production of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, located in Washington, D.C. For more information, visit us online at edexcellence.net.